So the talk is about illness and sickness as a turning point. And of course it's totally natural to be sick. And as I said, it's totally amazing to be healthy. I mean, it's a wonder that we are actually healthy. A small story: when I was visiting a Puttaparthi ashram of Sai Baba in India, with a whole bunch of people involved in health, doctors, therapists from abroad, and we were waiting in the blazing sun for about 3 hours, sitting on the concrete, until Sai Baba emerged and blessed us with his presence. And then he sort of ran past and asked someone, who are these guys? There were about 100 of us. We were there in a medical conference. So it was about 100 doctors and therapists. He said, who are these? And someone told him, he said, doctors, patients also. Like, very nice, three words, doctors, patience also, because everybody, you know, is in this dimension of sickness, health. And even though everyone gets sick, we make a big story out of it. We are so frustrated that we're not in control. It's a big challenge to the sense of wanting to be in control of our life. And then we have everything stops, all our plans, all our ideas, all our work, all our normal life, everything has to stop. And we struggle and we find ourselves in situations of fighting and of anxiety and of fear. And we struggle with doctors and we struggle with therapists and we struggle with therapies and we never know the right ones and we're never sure and we take this and we take that and we take that. And it's so much fear and so much despair and going with it. And then the symptoms themselves, which struggling with them. And it's a really busy thing. We're really busy with it. Mamashasuk. It's even though it's something so natural and kind of expected. And so it's really a good example of the First Noble Truth. That it's a really excellent example of the First Noble Truth of how we are with the sickness as suffering. What do we do with it? How much do we add suffering to it? How much are we wise with it? How much we can let go? How much we can free ourselves through sickness? How much sickness can be a source of freedom? And I think we should remember that any message of survival is a source of our busyness and trying to do something to make sure we survive, or a source of our freedom. The message, any message that talks about survival is a message that we can take in two directions. One, to try and as a problem, suffering, and one direction as a freedom.
Can you give an example?
Sickness. I mean, I'm going to give example now. It's a truth of our vulnerability and of our interbeing with the universe. The universe takes us to pieces. That's basic truth. As much as we can meet that and be inside it and find ourselves, we're already in pieces. We're already part of the universe that's just taking us to pieces as a separate, healthy, ki'ilu, functioning being. But if we really look carefully, the universe is inviting us to join it. The universe is inviting us to join it. Join it means sometimes to die. It means sometimes to be ill. It means sometimes to be happy. It means sometimes to be sad. It means to be a human being and to be a happy animal and to be nobody and to be somebody. And it has no. It's endless. And I think it's very hard to understand that unless we really get close to the situation itself of being not in control and of having a sickness. We have to get close to it. We have to, in the intimacy with the dachaf, lisrod, the survival urgency, with that intimacy, we can find some freedom. And that's the reason I think that sickness is one of the divine messengers of the Buddha. The Shlichim Elyonim. Sickness was the one of the four messengers that woke the Buddha up and said, Yala, you've got to find the liberation. The other one was death, the third one was poverty, and the fourth one was a monk. It means renunciation, giving up your palace. A death. And these are the four messengers from the Mala, you can say. And an example is a very good example I always use and I like is Sefer Iyov. Because it's exactly the story of sickness as a challenge, and he responded by misery, of course, and then a real quest for understanding, which he was so determined, just like the Buddha, so determined to get to the answer. He was desperate. Everything that people told him, he said, no, it's not that. You're giving me social truths. You're giving me tavniot, shtantzim, I don't know what, kind of automatic responses. And the whole book is full of these things, like you didn't do in your last past life, and that's why you're sick. Or you think you're a good person and you're not really, and all of these things. No, he didn't. He wanted to get to the source, and just like the Buddha, he wanted to get to the source. And of course, when the source came, it was a source of total freedom. That the problem was your relationship to it. The problem wasn't that there is sickness. The problem was that you're stuck in you and your pain. And the messages are always messages of a bigger world that is not to do with you. And that's the message of Iyov at the end. The message from God was not, I will give you an answer to your suffering. The message of God was, look at the animals playing in the, feel the Leviathan in the sea, feel the deer Ayalot in the forest. What you know, you're busy with yourself. Just forget yourself, and absorb yourself in the world. Lose yourself into the universe. And never mind Iyov. I mean. There's a few times I've been, in a way, blessed to be able to work intensively with somebody who is seriously sick and on a journey of dealing with sickness, cancer. And it's happened to me two or three times in my life that I've been able to go on a journey with them over some years. And I really remember how this is just the same story as the story of Eov. That, first of all, the sickness is a call to wake up. And the Sanskrit word for this is samvega. Samvega is urgency. It's spiritual urgency. It's not business as usual. A sickness tells you, wake up. You can't carry on as business as usual. You can't keep pushing away the survival mind, the world that is taking you to pieces. The world is taking you to pieces. You can't just pretend that it's all okay. You have to go deeply, intimately into this whole thing. And I remember working with Leora in Jerusalem. I don't know if you maybe know.
I treated her too.
Yeah.
It was very moving to me.
Exactly.
Because I got to know her at 2.5 years. She already was really very, very sick. It was very obvious. There was no way out. And we worked mainly with guided imagery. And She was just so amazing, and she got a lot of messages.
Yeah. And the blessing was that she was ready to go the journey. And then, of course, every month, I used to see her once a month, and every month it was different. The experiences were different, the learning was different, the wisdom was different, the needs were different, the suffering was different. But all the time, bit by bit, she was touching freedom. And the main thing was her interest in freedom, her interest in going this route, her interest, the urgency that the disease gave her, not to shut down, not to fall into the struggle and the despair and the confusion and so on and so on, but to really use her existential situation. And I would say she found a lot of freedom, a lot of freedom. And she died with a lot of freedom. And one thing very basic that it tells us, disease, is that most of the suffering of a disease is to do with our own mind, is to do with what we build out of it, all the projections, and some of them seem very obvious, like what's going to happen in the future. Well, who doesn't say that and think that all the time? You know, what's going to happen to me? But it's still the mind. It's still a voice that creates suffering. What's going to happen to me? My year. Will it get worse? Will it get better? And we need to kind of remember that we're not in control of life. We are only in control to some extent of our responses to life. We're not in control of what happens to us. We are, to some extent, not completely in control of how we react. And I want to read Treya Wilbur. And when she writes about this, Treya Wilbur, it's an extraordinary, some of you know her, have read her book. Well, it's written by Ken Wilbur, and she was suffering from cancer, and Ken was writing with her a book about her life and her disease. And she says that there is a natural need to ask the questions and a tone of blame. What did I do to deserve this? Why me? What did I do wrong? And if I had done things differently, then I wouldn't have. And so on. And she says, there is a natural desire to find causes and a defense against the fear of the unknown. But we forget that we can't control what happens to us. Only our response to it. The illusion of being in control is very aggressive to ourselves. It's a beautiful phrase.
The illusion of
being in control is very aggressive to ourselves. A person also needs to learn when and how to surrender, to let go. And this is a kind of taking charge as well. So we need to turn towards a challenge like sickness as an experience, fully engage with it as experience, to surrender to it in order to listen to it. The control is instead of that. So when we let go control, it opens the possibility of listening and of meeting it and of partnership with it. One of the titles of a long essay by a Zen teacher that was sick a lot of her life, as she said, it's dancing with demons. Nirukodim shedim. But you have to dance with them, not run away from them. And this Zen teacher, Florence Kaplow, she writes, she was also sick. I've had to learn to respond with compassion to the requests of the body, to treat the body as a partner in the dance. This is most true when the lights go dark and we are once again whirling into the territory of pain and weakness. It's easy to fight and resist, but I've learned the hard way how resistance increases the suffering. Instead, there has to be a kind of surrender. The body is firmly in lead, and my job is to follow it. And that's what this dancing partner has taught me. And a subtle part of the dance is knowing and remembering that although the body may be hurting, the heart and the mind have a different kind of freedom. And the most important thing I've learned in the last 9 years is that even in the midst of physical suffering, there can be happiness and joy.
לא קבוצה של חולי סרטן, חולים נורא נורא קשים. שמאוד מאוד חשוב שכשאנחנו מקשיבים ושומעים וחושבים פה, שנתכוונן גם לדברים היותר יומיומיים, לא דווקא הסוף. למשל, כאבי גב, אני לא סובל מכאבי גב. אני יכולה להגיד למשל מהדוגמה שלי, ש אני המון, המון כמון שנים סבלתי מכאבי גב. וחלק זה גם היה כאילו בלתי נמנע, כי הם צעירה, הילדים צעירים, מרימים וסוחבים הרבה יותר ממה שצריך. אבל כשהתחלתי להקשיב, והתחלתי ולעשות דברים שבאמת עושים לא טוב, ולהתנהל בהתאם למגבלות, אז הכאבי גב כמעט כבר לא נושאים את החיים שלנו.
בוודאי, בוודאי. בוודאי, אני זה מה שדיברנו כל הזמן. אני בוודאי, אני לא חושב שאפשר בבוקר תרגלנו על אולי מתח קטן בברך, לא יודע. אני, זה לא צריך להיות מחלות. הכל מחלה זה מספיק. הכל בעיה זה מספיק. הכל אי נחת זה מספיק. להיות, לרקוד איתו ולהקשיב ולפתוח את עצמנו לזה. But it's the same message, really. What is the essence of it? What are we doing with it? What is it telling us? Maybe we'll have questions later, because otherwise I'm recording, and otherwise then when it... It's okay, but because it's informal, it's not going to go to the whole world, but maybe we'll have the... Keep a note of your questions, we'll bring them up later. I think mindful awareness, one thing we learn in mindful awareness is to be non-judgmental, non-selective, we're actually learning not to be in control, or not to be pressure, under pressure to control. And I think mindfulness here is really, really, that's one of the keys to mindfulness. It's a sense of dancing. And I was, like I was saying, I was sick last night, and so more or less the whole night I was lying in the bed and listening to the symptoms and what are they saying. And they may be saying something, maybe saying nothing, they may be that, but in all cases, it opens channels. And the channels are, it can go in many different directions, but it creates an intimacy instead of turning it into an issue. And the intimacy, inside the intimacy, can be solutions to the problem as well. I'll talk more about that later. But without intimacy and dancing with it and surrendering to it and allowing it to express itself and allowing it to be what it is and to be totally open to its message and its call, its cry, that connectedness takes you in another place. You're just in another place. You're not the subject having to deal with. You are in partnership, like she said, the woman here. And the very fundamental change happens. Instead of moving away from what disturbs us, we move to it. That movement changes everything. Instead of moving away from what is disturbing, we move towards it. Because it's there to teach us something. It's there as a teacher. It's there to tell us, this is where you have to look. This is your first noble truth. This is where you need to work. If you honestly look at the first noble truth, after that comes the second, then the third. We move from being a victim of what happens that we can't control to being a witness. And if we're a witness to what we can't control, then it moves us towards less ownership, less balut, less me as a subject, less me as a victim, less me altogether. And because of that, because of the power of witnessing, the whole thing called a sickness or a disease or something that disturbs us becomes a pasifas. Pasifas, a mosaic, a kaleidoscope, in which we find more joy than if we didn't have it. We can find more joy because of our surrender to the uncontrollable life. And it's extraordinary. Also, Treya and this woman, Florence Kaplow, they write about it. And they write very beautifully. She writes, I found that happiness is often just right nearby, half hidden. And part of the practice of illness is learning to recognize and rejoice in it. The forsythia flowers in the window, the taste of a persimmon, the joy of a friend. And I've learned that happiness is less about external circumstances, but it's an inherent quality of the mind. And Treya writes, if I do become well for long periods of time, will I lose this delicious, keen knife edge of awareness that I now have? This satisfyingly one-pointed focus. I feel that inner restrictions have burst and new creativity pours forth under pressure of this illness, and I would hate to lose that. There are moments when I feel practically ecstatic, just sitting on the veranda and looking at the view at the back of the house and watching the puppies play. I feel so blessed in this moment. Each breath is so incredible, so joyful, so dear. What am I missing? What could be wrong? And she's writing this just shortly before she died. With the inner work, I feel that the emotional roller coaster of advanced cancer becomes a wonderful opportunity to practice equanimity, and at the same time as my passion for life increases, I feel continually challenged and excited and deeply engaged in life. Learning to make friends with cancer, learning to make friends with the possibility of an early death, has taught me a great deal about making friends with myself as I am and with the whole of life as it is. So I'm encouraging kind of opening channels which are normally closed. And sometimes a disease will do it for us where other things do not, because it goes to the heart of our survival. When our survival is challenged, at that point, in a way, we have no choice. We can, like the Buddha said, it's suffering matures as a quest, as a chipus, or it matures as misery. And we have this point that we take this road or this road, and illness is really bringing us to this point. And also any pain, And I agree with you, Rachel. It doesn't have to be cancer. It can be any pain can tell us, are we going to go in the direction of chipus chakira or in the direction of misery? And it should be something else. There's many, many ways in which once we decide that we want to work with something, some inner decision, or inner intuition, that we turn towards it, we have a lot of help available. Many, many ways. Because turning towards something brings a kind of release. Running away from it, we're stuck. But turning towards it, like Treya said, it brings a sort of release. Okay, that's really what's happening. I'm now engaging with the reality instead of trying to cover it, struggle against it, sort it out, fix it. I was very impressed, and this is a story going back many, many years, with a woman who started a cancer centre in England in the 80s, really early on. It was the first natural cancer centre anywhere, I think. Bath. In Bath. Or Bristol. 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 Bristol.
What do you mean by nature centre?
Where people would come and they would have all kinds of natural treatments and many different kinds of work, inner work and outer work. And what was the name of the woman that started it? Beata? No.
I don't remember. I met her.
I
don't remember her name. זאת הייתה עבודה מאוד אישית גם. היה כאילו 24 שעות. אבל אני גם מכירה בקורה ישראלית שהייתה שם,
זה לא סוף, זה היה במקום. זה פול קונטנציונלי או משולב?
גם וגם.
זה לא היה במקום, זה היה אינטגרלי. אבל הם כן, היו שם הרופאים, הם כן לפעמים הורידו דברים מהקונבנציונלי, אבל זה היה משולב.
And she said something interesting, I never forgot it. She said, people sometimes ask, why do you do groups? How can that help groups? Does it do anything to the cancer cells? And she said, you know, sometimes one of the most powerful movements that happen in a group is if somebody deeply, deeply goes into forgiveness. And forgiveness, either to themselves or to others, releases a life force which is blocked. And sometimes, yes, the life force can do magic. And it's just this other attitude. I'll talk more about it, you know, later and tomorrow. But other questions and attitude of dealing with a sickness or a pain, unblocking the life in it. Listening is part of unblocking. Listening and being connected is part of unblocking the life force. But it goes deeper than that, because the joy and the joy that Treya talked about, the joy that Yael talked about in her time with cancer, the joy that we can experience in our own life from meeting the uncontrollable nature of things, brings us to joy, because we stop the illusion that we are in control and we ourselves are have to deal with life. It just stops the illusion, this sense of deep listening and surrender and connection opens something in us. It's not against doing something that we need to do. The Buddha had a doctor. Why not? It doesn't mean that we shouldn't do. We do what we need to do. If we're hungry, we go to eat. We don't need to say, oh, I mustn't be busy with survival, so I won't eat. You know, we're hungry, so we go and eat. But how do we do that? And what are the messages that we're listening to? And what is the attachments? There is a beautiful sutta, and I think I sent it to you. Did I send it? Anathapindika Sutta? Yeah. What's special about this sutta is he was dying, and the Buddha sent Sariputta, I think, to talk to him.
He asked.
And Sariputta basically went on a list of the entire nature of a human being. A list of everything that a human being experiences. Perceptions and thought and feeling and consciousness and aggregates and subtle states and non-subtle gross states and the whole lot. And all the time saying, this you don't need to be attached to. This you let go of. This you let go of. Don't need to be attached to this and this and this and this and this, the whole lot. And Anathapindika was really inspired because he'd not had this teaching before. Though he'd been around the Buddha, but somehow or other he was a lay person, he wasn't a monk. So he didn't get this teaching and he was really inspired. And in a way, it wasn't that he was able to practice it deeply. Maybe he just couldn't practice it because didn't have time and he wasn't a monk and he didn't have that. But he was so inspired by it that he died peacefully. He's so inspired, he kind of said, well, I can die happy because this teaching exists. Which is really extraordinary. And I think I sent it to you. And it takes us, in the end, if we're really dancing with these demons, which, as I say, can be little demons or big ones. But if we really dance, and I would say now the demons become angels also. It's no longer clear whether they're demons or angels, because they all come to tell us something. There's something there that opens up for us. And we find equanimity, like Treya was talking. We find that we are beautifully touched by the small things in life because we're no longer busy with trying to control anything. We are beautifully awakened by small things. We are invited by our vulnerability, our pigiyut chelanu, and our listening to the difficult places and the way they transform when we listen to them. The whole of life is so much more open and dynamic and free and joyful because of our readiness to dance with these demons. And so it takes this commitment from us to do that. And it takes an interest to do that. And I agree, hopefully it doesn't, we don't have to wait till some serious disease to do that. But it's no doubt that these channels that open up when we really meet our difficulties of the body are really can be very precious. It opens total new channels to life. Arutzim chadashim v'chazakim. But it does need all those qualities. We need to bring to it surrender. We need to bring to it listening. We need to bring to it forgiveness. We need to bring to it openness. We need to bring to it a kind of not mind of not fixing, not knowing, so that's what I wanted to say, and maybe we can open this a little bit to some discussion. Yeah.